Whether you like it or not, we live in an online world, and with every click, you leave behind a digital footprint. But despite our online presence, this year really tested our tech literacy, from personal data hacks here at home and globally the collapse of crypto and Elon Musk's extraordinary Twitter takeover, which is still very much playing out every day. Central to all these scandals was the pursuit of money.
If there's one thing Twitter loves, it is itself. It shares that with billionaire Elon Musk, who just made a take-it-or-leave-it offer for the whole damn thing, all of Twitter.
Twitter's now in a very public fight with its biggest shareholder.
The billionaire posted a video of himself walking into Twitter's headquarters carrying a sink. Now the Tesla boss also updated his Twitter bio to Chief Twit.
I have too much work on my plate, that is for sure. This is not something I'd recommend.
It's FTX. It's a safe and easy way to get into crypto.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I'm never wrong about this stuff.
Cryptocurrency exchange FTX filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy today, following several days of enormous turmoil. Founder and CEO Sam Bankman-Fried has announced his official resignation.
One of the worst scandals in the history of the crypto industry.
I made a lot of mistakes or things I would give anything to be able to do over again. I didn't ever try to commit fraud. Money, money, money.
The words of former FTX CEO Sam Bankman-Fried there. To make sense of all of the changes in the cyberspace, the scandals and all the other things, I'm joined by Alastair McGibbon, who is the Chief Strategy Officer at CyberCX, and Professor Yesha Yadav is Associate Dean of Vanderbilt University, specialising in corporate bankruptcy, financial regulation and cryptocurrency. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much, Patricia. I'm really happy to be here.
Alastair, can we start by putting things just in context? How much has the internet and our understanding around the value of personal data really changed this year?
Well, Patricia, our knowledge of cyber risk continues to evolve. This is the first time in this country that we've had what I call lounge room discussions around cybersecurity. Most Australians were either affected or know someone who was affected through Optus, Medibank, or someone in between. And that has led to a discussion around what data is collected, how data is used, whether it's retained, when it's destroyed, and then more broadly, how do we protect that data? Then more broadly again into cyber risk. So while these have been dreadful examples of cyber risk being realised, there are upsides because it started a conversation in those lounge rooms, which have been happening in boardrooms now for quite some time, so that we can head in a better direction.
That's really interesting. Yesha, let's look at the biggest tech story of the year. And that's, I think, really Twitter, and it's still playing out. It's still a story. After months of flip-flopping and legal threats, Elon Musk finally bought the platform. Was it worth it?
Well, that's the question that not just Elon Musk is asking, but the entire world is asking. As I think all of us are experiencing, Twitter appears to be, in some cases, a very different platform than it was last year. In particular, concerns have been raised about content moderation, concerns have been raised about potential for future cyberbullying through Twitter, just the general quality of the platform and its interactions going forward. For Elon Musk, obviously, the problem is slightly different. As you said, Patricia, in your introduction, it's all about the money. And Elon Musk had to borrow extremely heavily in order to get Twitter onto his portfolio, around $40 billion, in fact. And so it's very important for him to continue to generate the revenue that he needs just to pay off his debt. And, you know, this picture is not looking as rosy as it might once have done. In particular, given the content moderation issues and other things, advertisers have been leaving Twitter in droves. In addition, that has obviously put pressure on Elon Musk and his finances. And in fact, so much so that conversations have been had about potentially putting Twitter into bankruptcy and what that world will look like for the public square as a whole, not just for in the US, but broadly, the way that we talk to each other online, the way that we interact and learn information from one another. Those are all things in jeopardy potentially going forward if indeed these financial challenges come to bear and Twitter ends up being in Chapter 11. So the question of is it worth it is really up in the air at this point.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Alistair, before buying Twitter, Musk said the platform had extraordinary power and that he would unlock it. Has he unlocked it?
Well, if unlocking it means unlocking the gate so more barbarians can flow in to pour on their filth to normal humans, then yeah, sure.
Tell us what you really think, Alistair.
He unlocked the potential. You know, the thing that saddens me, Patricia, is I know a lot of the teams that were the trust and safety teams in places like Twitter. And they were literally the thin line, as I mix my analogies, protecting as best they could people against, you know, frankly, faceless bullies online. I was, as you know, the eSafety Commissioner. Twitter was one of those entities that we tried to help protect Australians on. I think it's a sad day when the first staff sacked are those that are there to protect normal Twitter users. It really makes it a dangerous, increasingly dangerous platform, sadly.
Yeah, so when Musk took over Twitter, he offered an ultimatum. He said, commit to extremely hardcore work or leave the company. And now hundreds did, while others followed his method of sleeping in the office. If the platform continues to stay afloat, and of course that's a big if, but it still is so far, what message does a trimmed down staff send to the rest of Silicon Valley?
Well, as Alistair said, this is very problematic from the perspective of just creating a safe working environment that would encourage those folks to come in, that would then provide a safe interaction environment for the digital marketplace. So the message that's going out here is that you either work or burn. And that's not in line with the general tenor of today's society, which is trying to encourage a more friendlier, inclusive marketplace. But then the question really becomes what these employees then create as a culture for Twitter going forward. And in particular, just as Alistair mentioned, one of the big issues now is that we've all come to rely so heavily on Twitter as part of our marketplace of ideas for good or bad. And if the employee culture ends up becoming extremely toxic, one that kind of welcomes a certain kind of person to work there, what does that say about the kind of product that they will be working on and creating and putting out into the world for the rest of us to use? And so there's definitely that risk, exactly as Alistair mentioned, that this becomes an environment that is toxic, that is really potentially vulnerable to bullying and creating an atmosphere that is not the kind of content heavy, but rather one that is personality driven, that's potentially toxic for both users as well as for those that are working in these environments.
Let's move on to another huge story this year, and really also moving on from one billionaire to another. The spectacular collapse of FTX saw the demise of crypto. You know, the guy that was making so much money, it was unbelievable, Sam Bankman-Fried. Can you remind our listeners, Yesha, I'll stay with you, about this crypto exchange server? How did it all come crumbling down like it did?
Well, Patricia, you know, 2 weeks is a very long time in 2022. And in fact, the FTX collapse wiped out $32 billion worth in shareholder value in the space of a week. In addition, obviously, as we know, there's over $10 billion worth of customer funds that are trapped in that exchange. This was one of the biggest exchanges in the entire world. This was the exchange that made crypto safe for users across the entire world. And the way it came down was a tale of classic greed and mismanagement, one that appears to be even more chaotic the more we learn about it. Absolutely no record keeping, money being commingled, money being used from customers that was used to take extremely risky bets in the market. The crypto market went south this year, but that's not the issue. In fact, FTX was making losses well before 2022. In fact, the bankruptcy filing showed this was an entity that was making over $3 billion worth of losses last year. And so the problems here were extremely deep, extremely endemic. And unfortunately, they came to roost because they came out into the public square. We're talking about Twitter. A tweet did the damage. As soon as a tweet went out into the market, customers rushed for the exits, sought to get their money out. And as a result, FTX had to declare bankruptcy.
Incredible sort of link there with the previous story. We talked about Twitter and how powerful it is for these kinds of moves. Look, Alistair, what needs to happen to make sure that this kind of corporate collapse can't happen again?
Well, this is plain and simple Ponzi scheme. It's old school fraud carried out via the internet. There were significant elements of hubris of people over hyping this stuff, the venture capitalists and others, and the media played its role combined with social media where you can essentially lie about financial instruments. So what's needed? Frankly, one of the oldest pieces of advice we would have been given as children, which if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. Now, had I bought into Bitcoin or some other piece of vaporware online early, I would have made a lot of money. But the reality is I would have made that money on the losses of other people. We need to wake up and realize there's no such thing as getting rich quick. Certainly not getting rich quick that's good for society. And, you know, we need to see regulators. You know, I'm a regulator at heart, as you know, and, you know, it's time for regulators to step into these places and say that trading in this stuff has to be backed by some sense of actual wealth. So if you say something's worth a dollar, have some form of assets that back it. Pretty simple. We've learned to do that most of the time offline. There are still pretty spectacular frauds that occur there. We shouldn't be surprised that they occur online. What we should be annoyed at is that they occur so often online, Patricia.
Mm. And with so little recourse for so many people. I just want to go into another story before we say goodbye, and that's in relation to all of this hacking we've seen. Alistair, millions of Australians realised just how unsafe their personal information is when Optus and Medibank were separately hacked this year. And of course, we know that there may be others. It's a real wake-up call, I think, for individuals as well as governments and corporations, right? I mean, individuals just realised how vulnerable they were.
Yeah, Patricia, you've named two of 16 that we know of in November, where largely Eastern European crime groups have tried to or have stolen data from Australian businesses and governments and sometimes locked up their computer systems. We've just seen these as huge examples of it, but this is a very regular occurrence. As I said at the top of the story, this is about sadly educating us. Horrendous circumstances, particularly for those whose personal medical information has been leaked online. You know, the Home Affairs Minister said it was a dog act. She's right. These are just criminals making money out of misery online. But the upside of all of this is it has caused a massive shift in the public. And that means, you know, I'm the type of person when he checks into a hotel, when he's paid online and they ask for the driver's license when you check in late at night, even though you've already paid, and they want to photocopy it, I refuse to let them do it. I let them see it, of course, so they can tie my identity to the booking. But why should they ever photocopy it? It's time in this country that we do stop handing over information that isn't necessary, and that most importantly, organisations stop demanding information that isn't necessary. Now, that does not mean, of course, that organisations shouldn't collect data. They have to provide services, but it means they need to understand cyber risk. It's always going to be realised. There, but for the grace of God, goes lots of other organisations, and we need to be careful not to throw too many stones. We can always learn from these, make a more resilient society, and remember the huge upsides that come from technology. An efficient society, a productive society, a wealthy society. The byproduct of that, unfortunately, is cyber risk and criminality. And our jobs collectively is to try to tamp that down while recognising the benefits.
Yeah, so will we see a big change in consumer behaviour as a result of these very high-profile hacks? Or do we need to push for greater corporate regulation and changes to law reform? We've had some in Australia, but more. For instance, you know, outlawing the demand for some of this data, all of that sort of stuff.
It's a great question, Patricia. I think in terms of changing behaviour, it really depends generationally. I think we have Gen Z and millennials that have essentially grown up very digitally online, where sharing data is much less problematic and is done potentially much less carefully. So I don't think we can count on necessarily having people's behavior change without a lot more education and effort. But we can make changes to the law. We can hold companies accountable that don't do their job in protecting data. And in the US, for example, exactly as in Australia, these kinds of breaches are happening day in, day out. But there are consequences. So, for example, in the case of the Equifax breach, it's a credit reporting agency that leaked the data of millions of Americans. There have been lawsuits, there have been class actions, as well as just last month, a multi-state settlement against Equifax and T-Mobile by the states themselves to try and hold the feet to the fire of these companies that were leaking information online. Is that enough? It's a work in progress. And I think the regulation has to be part of the solution there that creates some real costs for companies that are not doing a proper job in looking after data. And that means that it becomes a part of the conversation in boardrooms. It becomes an essential part of what counts as good fiduciary responsibility towards shareholders. It means that shareholders themselves are going to pay attention and hold the feet of board members to the fire and corporate compliance officers to the fire, because they know that if something goes wrong, that there will be lawsuits, there will be public shaming, and furthermore, there will be government action against breaches that happen in this context as a way to ensure that we are doing we're investing much more heavily in this infrastructure, because I don't think we can count on people changing the behavior. And also, we're trying just to live and get by and do our best. And sometimes mistakes are obviously are made, even for careful people who are trying to protect themselves. So I think regulation has to do a lot of the job here.
Yeah, I think that is very well put. Thank you so much to both of you for joining us this morning.
Patricia, thank you so much for having me.
Professor Yesha Yadav is Associate Dean at Vanderbilt University, specialising in corporate bankruptcy and financial regulation and cryptocurrency. Alistair McGibbon, who is the Chief Strategy Officer at CyberCX, and as he mentioned there, former eSafety Commissioner. You're listening to ABC RN Breakfast.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.